Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
Indeed, it is. This week we discussed New Zealand's relationship with China and the media's inflation with over the kind of issues that apparently we're facing, as well as the crime survey about for the new reformations on the justice system called Strengthening the Criminal Justice System for Victims Survey, and so that will be ongoing over the course of the next few months, and here's Andrew Little to talk about that. I started by asking him what format the survey would take and what they're kind of hoping to achieve from it.
It's an online survey, and there's a lot of open-ended questions. The idea is to hear from victims themselves about their experiences and really to focus on what it is that the broader criminal justice system, right from the police to the courts to whatever else, can be done to better support victims of crime. We know, and I know from feedback I get from a lot of victims, particularly serious crime, is that often they feel completely lost in the system. They feel like they're a bit player. They don't really know at what points they get to have a say. And although we've got a good victim support network and what have you, what you actually need is people who can advocate for victims at every step of the way to make sure that their voice is heard. So it's about hearing from victims to see what it is that we can improve in the system that's going to, I think, make it fairer for them.
It says that the results from the survey will inform Dr. Kim McGregor's advice to the government. What is Dr. Kim McGregor's role in this process, and what is this advice-giving process?
She's the Chief Government Victims Advisor, so it was a role set up by the previous government as trying to draw together information that goes into the Ministry of Justice, to the police, to other agencies, and then advise the government on things that could be improved. It's very much a part-time role. I've expanded it in the time I've been minister. But I think what it does tell us is that there is a need for a lot more support for victims. So she is leading up a workshop that we're running in 2 or 3 weeks' time in Wellington of victims and victims' advocates and those associated with supporting victims. This follows on the Criminal Justice Summit that we had in August last year, the kind of offshoot of that. So they're meeting for 2 days. Preliminary results of the survey will be fed into that workshop, and that workshop will be the basis on which Dr. McGregor pulls together various suggestions and proposals and ideas and advises me and the Safe and Effective Justice Advisory Group, who are putting together their big report for later this year on reforms that we should make in the criminal justice system.
Right, so that leads quite well into the next question. As you've mentioned, the advice will go in towards workshops and the Hapatia Te Oranga Tangata and Safe Effective Justice Program. Is that justice program a new subsection of the ministry, or is this simply for this issue and it's a working group?
The Hapatia program is the overall program of criminal justice reform that we kicked off last year. The Criminal Justice Summit was part of it. This victims workshop is part of it. We've got a Hui Māori coming up in April. That's part of it. And we've got the Te Iupu, which is the advisory group. They are part of the total program of reform. They are those forums and that group are the basis on which we're putting together ideas for proposals for change in the criminal justice system.
Right. Is there anything that you think is likely to come up in the results of these surveys?
If my conversations with victims and the correspondence that I get from victims is anything to go by, I expect to hear about better ways that the system can support victims. I know I dealt with a family member of somebody who was the victim of a homicide. I met with them early last year, my time as minister, and it was interesting hearing from them. They were in a small rural town, and they felt as if they had no support whatsoever. They thought the police gave them some information about victim support, presumably because the nearest victim support person was, you know, a couple of hours' drive away. They felt as if they didn't get any support at all. And then when it came to the trial and to sentencing and so on, they basically had to fight their own way to make sure that they got their rights as victims upheld. And that just shouldn't be happening. I know I've heard from other victims who say if they've had to travel a distance to get to a trial, they've struggled to get reimbursement of costs and things like that. And I just think there's a lot more we can do to make it easier for victims to navigate the system. I said in Parliament the other day, I mean, the reality is that victims are the one group of people in our criminal justice system who are not there because of any choice they've made or any action they've taken. It's because of what has happened to them, and it's a system that is very unaccommodating of them. So that's what I'm keen to see change.
It's certainly a very interesting point. So you would agree that it is important to put those who are victims of crime at the centre of creating a safer justice system?
Yeah, well, look, we've got a number of considerations we have to weigh up. Obviously, when it comes to dealing with offenders and defendants, there are some basic principles that innocent until proven guilty and right to a fair trial and those sorts of things. And we've built up a lot of institutions and rules around making sure those rights are upheld, but we've done less about ensuring that victims don't feel re-victimised or traumatised by the system that is meant to be delivering them justice as well.
Carrying on from that, do you think that we should listen to perpetrators of crime, both current and former, on what reforms and repeals they believe should be put in place?
Yeah, and we do that. And I think they've certainly got plenty to offer about, in terms of their insights about their kind of journey through the system. And I'm particularly interested in the insights I get from offenders about the treatment they get after, usually after they've been sentenced or even before sentencing, because I know, one of the gaps we have is that somebody is arrested or detained, they may be in the community or they may be remanded in custody, but they have issues that, you know, usually related to addiction and things like that or mental health, that they get no attention to until there's a conviction and a sentence, and they then might get some help. But even then, if they wind up in prison, there's often not a lot of help there. So I think there's a lot more that we can do for offenders to change their behaviours so that they are safer both for themselves and obviously for the community.
Yeah, certainly. It's a rather, almost like, yeah, holistic issue. Are there any other voices that you believe aren't currently being heard in the way our justice system operates that you think are integral in hearing?
I think, you know, the victims, obviously, because they're the ones who've been offended against. I think offenders, because we've built this whole system up that is actually meant to be not just about calling them to account, but actually, to the best extent we can, helping them or changing their behaviours. And that's an area where the system has fallen down. Of course, we've got, you know, the lawyers, the judges, the various others. We've got specialists like psychologists. They are very articulate and they are very well represented when it comes to the forums that we have to review the justice system periodically. But it's making sure that we're hearing from all voices. There is, of course, the community, and there's a variety of voices there. But in the end, I think what most people want to know is that we are striving for a system that is going to that keeps the community safe. And that is not to say that, you know, we'll ever stamp out crime completely, but that when it happens, there's an effective response that minimises the probability that a person who has offended once is going to offend again. We've got a long way to achieve that aspiration, but I'm confident that over time and with the right responses and doing the right things, we could do that.
Certainly, we can all hope. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to those points?
Yeah, you know, I think that probably covers the point.
Okay, so there's been a lot of talk about China and New Zealand and the relationship between the two countries in the media currently. However, from what I understand, it is at this point just that, a lot of discussion, although there have been some interactions. Some commentators have linked these kind of interactions or events to the coalition government's decisions or actions, i.e. some commentators have tried to link a downturn in Chinese enrollments in the New Zealand education system to the coalition government's actions, and some are speculating that exports aren't reaching China due to the government's rejection of the Huawei 5G network plan, which, may I add, from everything I've read and the import statistics, is perhaps factually incorrect. How do you currently perceive Aotearoa's relationship with China?
Look, I think it's as strong as it ever was. I think there's been a lot of overblown reports about things happening between New Zealand and China, but actually when you explore it and look at it, I've yet to see any report that says that exporters are not getting their goods into market. Likewise, importers not getting their stuff out of China. So that's happening. Tourist numbers are as high as they ever were. Student numbers might have decreased, but you know, there's an issue too internally in China. Their Chinese economy is slowing, and families that might once upon a time have afforded to send their child or children abroad for education, there's fewer of them doing it. So I think that might explain a small decline in enrolments from China. But largely, things are pretty much as they ever were, and the utterances that we're getting from officials of the Chinese government is that whatever problems there are, they're saying, can be resolved with discussion, and there is no major erosion of the relationship between the two countries.
Certainly, I think it's interesting, as you say, that the foreign ministry spokesperson for China, I believe it's Geng Shuang, said that this is like perhaps the media should listen to the Chinese government, not the Chinese newspapers that are supposedly reporting this as well. What would you ideally like to see the relationship between Aotearoa and China being?
It's like our relationship with any other country, that we have good people-to-people links, that we have good trade links, but we preserve our sovereignty, and so we make our decisions for ourselves. We don't, in relation to any other country, we won't agree on 100% of everything there is going on. There'll be things that we disagree with. Like you look at Australia, not only our nearest sort of neighbour, but arguably our closest international friend. We disagree with some of the things that are happening there, particularly in relation to the deportation of New Zealand citizens, many of whom have actually little or no connection with New Zealand. Of course, we're going to call them out publicly on that, and we do, and we have. It doesn't stop us having an extraordinarily strong relationship with Australia. With China, they are a superpower. They're a big player in the world. We know they want goods that we produce and that we export. Why wouldn't we want to have that sort of relationship? But equally, we have to look to our broader interests and protect ourselves against any risks, and that's what we do. And sometimes there's behaviour by China, as there is with other countries, that we disagree with, and sometimes we call that out. But we maintain a good relationship otherwise.
Do you think New Zealand currently holds that relationship? Or if not, what steps do you think we should take to get to that point?
I think, our relationship with China goes back a long way. And if you have a look, and actually particularly when the Labor Party has been in government, whether on its own or in coalition, it's taken a lot of steps to advance that relationship. It was the Kirk government who, pretty much within weeks of being elected in 1972, opened diplomatic relations with China. We were the first country to recognise China as a market economy. That meant that they could get membership of the WTO. We were the first country in the world to get a free trade agreement with China. So we've worked very hard to establish our relationship with China. As I say, there's things that happen in China that the Chinese government is responsible for that we don't like, that we're uncomfortable with. And we manage that, we deal with that. That comes up in the dialogue we have with China. But on the whole, we have a good relationship with China as a country. We welcome their people when they visit here or when they come to settle here. And that's the way it should be.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.